From the Land-Grant University in Urbana-Champaign, Illinois, this is the Closing Market Report. It is the 16th day of November 2011. I'm Todd Gleason. In a few moments, we'll talk about the commodity markets with Paul Cooley at ADM Investor Services in Oakland, Illinois. And a bit later in the half hour, we'll discuss the cash grain market with the folks at the Andersons Climbers Facility in Delphi, Indiana. In today's agricultural news, Senator Grassley is concerned the Ag Committee in Washington, D.C., has not moved fast enough to present a farm bill to the super committee. MF Global's demise is having a rolling effect on commodity trade and consumer confidence and exchanges, and USDA has released hundreds of millions of dollars for the development of rural broadband. We'll have more on these ag news stories a bit later in the program. And as we close out this half hour, we'll talk with Drew Lerner of World Weather Incorporated from Kansas City, right here on this Wednesday edition of the Closing Market Report, a production of Illinois Public Media from the University of Illinois.
Support comes from Murray Wise Associates, a nationwide agricultural advisory firm and land auction company specializing in the acquisition, management, and disposition of farmland and agribusiness investments. Land, auctions, agribusiness. More information is at murraywiseassociates.com.
In Chicago on this Wednesday afternoon, futures finished the day mostly lower. December contract and the soft red winter wheat down 16 cents for the day at $6.16¾. July at $6.72¼, down 6¼ cents on the afternoon. Hard red in Kansas City for the July at $7.17, down 15 cents. December corn futures $6.42¾. 2¾ lower. March contract at $6.52, the settlement down 2¾ as well. May corn $6.58, 2½ cents lower. July at $6.60½, down 2½, and December of next year at $5.81¼, down 2¼. January beans $11.87¾, 12½ cents lower. March futures at $11.98, down 12¼, and the May futures $12.07¾ in the bean pit, down 12. July, 12.17, 11¼ lower. And the August at 12.13, 11½ lower. November beans at 12.01¾ for next year, down 9½ cents. December bean meal, $2.96.40, down $5. December soybean oil at $52.48, 12 cents lower on the afternoon. Live cattle finished December at 122 and a nickel, up 32½. February at 124.30, up 25 cents. November feeders were down a dime at 143.40. The January feeder cattle, though, up 50 cents at $148.87½. And the lean hogs finished the December at $85.55, down 90. February at $88.92½, down 87½. This is the Closing Market Report. Here's what the outside markets look like at this hour. Crude oil futures above $100 a barrel today, $3.02 higher at $102.39 a barrel. Ethanol at $2.69¾, that's a penny and 9 cents higher. Natural gas at $3.35¾, 5½ cents lower. And the heating oil for the day, $3.13, and it finished just about 4 cents lower for the day. Gold futures at $1,773.80 an ounce, down $7.90. The Dow now 41 points lower at 12,055. Here's what the weather forecast looks like as it comes from the National Weather Service on this Wednesday afternoon. Partly sunny skies, they say, a high near 44 degrees in the Urbana-Champaign area. A north-northwest wind at 8 to 13, gusting as high as 20. And then tonight, a chance of flurries, that's right, snow flurries after midnight, partly cloudy. A low of 27 degrees, northwest winds between 5 and 7 miles to the hour. Thursday night, mostly clear, a low of 30, south-southwest winds between 6 and 13, gusting to as high as 20. And Friday, sunny, a high of near 52 degrees, breezy with a south-southwest wind between 13 and 23. Friday night, partly cloudy, a low of 40 degrees. Saturday, mostly cloudy, breezy, a high of 57. Saturday night, a chance of showers, a few thunderstorms, mostly cloudy, breezy, and a low of 43. On Sunday during the day, a chance of showers, a few thunderstorms, mostly cloudy, a high at 51 degrees. Sunday night, a chance of showers, mostly cloudy, and a low of 38. Monday of next week, cloudy, 48. Monday night, cloudy, 34. And Tuesday, mostly sunny, a high near 46. A more complete look at the weather forecast when we get to the bottom of the half hour. We'll talk with Drew Lerner of World Weather Incorporated. Just one more time. Tomorrow during the day, we'll have sunny skies, a high of 43 degrees.
Todd Gleason's services are made available to WILL by University of Illinois Extension.
You're listening to the Closing Market Report. It is a Wednesday afternoon. On the phone line with us, Paul Cooley of ADM Investor Services in Oakland, Illinois. Good afternoon to you, Paul.
Good afternoon, Todd.
Tell me about the marketplace. A bit of a turnaround from yesterday. Headed back down again.
Yeah, you know, what caught my eye from the early morning was this story about a Canadian Enbridge basically reversing a pipeline that will allow Cushing oil terminals to ship oil to the Gulf early in the new year, about 150,000 barrels a day. And this created a very large spike in crude oil prices, up $3 a barrel. And, of course, it did hurt oil refinery stocks. And also, the oil companies aren't rallying like they normally would. The stock market's rather tranquil here. And back to our real commodity world, the grains, we had a very strong rally yesterday. We understood that the Chinese had been aggressive buyers of soybeans, and at the same time, the weather people increased rainfall forecasts for the western wheat country, which put pressure there. But it looks, and the Wall Street Journal continue to have major articles about the problems with Mann Financial and the, you know, all the havoc and uncertainty in the commodity world. And it looked like today's trade was also based a lot on the Wall Street Journal's article about turmoil in Europe, major economic problems that are spreading throughout the continent there, and such countries as Holland, Denmark, Belgium, countries that usually you know, dot their I's and cross their T's and are you know, are usually financially sound. So obviously, Europe isn't going to have the same standard of living as the U.S. In the next few years because of their major economic problems.
A bit later in the program, we'll hear a news story from the CFTC with an official quoted as saying that confidence in exchanges has been shaken because of the MF Global demise and the not segregation of funds, customer funds, that that company appears to have done as they've made it through the exchange system.
Well, obviously, somebody's going to spend some time in some federal penitentiaries, and it has broken some sacred trusts in commodity futures markets. It's created a great deal of uncertainty, unfortunately, in the industry. It's hurt a lot of friends out there and a lot of good customers that listen to our programs, and it's a very unfortunate thing. And it's not little money. It's big money, you know, $600 to $800 million.
I'll turn your attention back to the marketplace now. If you're going to discuss with a producer at this time whether or not they should make any sales of either corn or soybeans in storage, would you make a suggestion that that happen?
Well, new crop corn, soybeans, and wheat are definitely a lot different commodity than they were a year ago. And, of course, one of the things that helped boost new corn and soybean prices last year was we had to buy acres. So every time a dip occurred, farmers could sit back and enjoy, you know, a new marketplace down the road. This year, it's very different, and it's not glamorous to have commodity funds buying commodities. So the answer is yes, a person does have to take a little different approach than he did and has in the past, and the markets, in my opinion, act horrible as far as trading is concerned. So, yes, I don't think corn's going to $7 soon in the cash market. And, yes, I don't think we're going to go over much over $12 soon in the bean market. There is definitely a feeling that China will buy beans. There is a feeling that the old crop corn is going to be extremely tight. But we have some very fierce competitors. And my general take is that a person does have to use very good rallies in here to move inventory and not be bashful about it.
There is an inverse in the corn market, and we have a very strong basis overs in most places still for cash corn.
Yeah. You know, a person at this time of year and with that kind of price level, farmers can focus more on flat price. We understand there's a lot of people opening their doors to free delayed price, and that's an interesting twist this early in the year. But as a general rule, a person does have to be a fairly good marketer, and that would also encourage a practice of selling the grain and turning around and re-owning it with some sort of options or future strategy.
Thank you so much for taking the
time
with us.
Have a profitable day, Todd.
You too, Paul. Paul Cooley is with ADM Investor Services. He's in Oakland, Illinois. Joins us here on the Closing Market Report on this Wednesday afternoon. Support comes from the Farm Doc Project at the University of Illinois, holding a series of five Illinois Farm Economics Summit meetings December 12th through the 16th to discuss and analyze the most pressing economic issues facing Illinois producers. Registration and details on their website, farmdoc.illinois.edu.
Support for today's broadcast comes from ADM, now providing a new mobile site, FarmerView, for up-to-date futures, weather, market commentary, and local bids. Available at adm.com/FarmerView.
In today's agricultural news, Iowa Senator Chuck Grassley says time is just about up for the Hill Ag leaders to submit a farm bill to the Deficit Reduction Supercommittee, which would leave the bill to be written next year. Grassley warned last week that the window of opportunity for the four House and Senate Ag Committee leaders to put legislation together for the supercommittee was closing. With a November 23rd deadline looming, Grassley is hoping it's not already too late for ag to act.
We're getting almost to the point where I wonder whether we can get anything into the supercommittee. It's my hope that we can, because I think leaving it over till next year is going to be problematic in election year.
Well, complicating, Grassley argues, whether Congress can stay within the $23 billion in farm bill deficit cuts over 10 years that the ag leaders offered the supercommittee. As for a partial farm bill now, that lists just titles and cuts for those, Grassley says.
They've ruled that out, 12. That's something that did happen over the weekend.
A frustrated Grassley told reporters that the options to weigh in individually are limited.
The law also set a date of November the 1st, which obviously is passed. But even if we'd met the November 1st date, or even if they have advanced the opening of the supercommittee to take our suggestions even as of today or tomorrow, the supercommittee can do whatever they want to with their recommendations.
And with the supercommittee itself reportedly tied in knots on the final plan, regional ag differences over the extent of a new farm bill safety net seem to pale in comparison to the bigger problem. Well, speaking of big problems, let's turn to the MF Global situation, which has been called unique. A U.S. Commodity Futures Trading Commission, or CFTC commissioner, Scott O'Malley, says the MF Global investigation is unique because customer funds are missing from the segregated accounts. This differs from the Lehman Brothers bankruptcy, in which there were not shortfalls in the segregated account. In a statement issued early this morning, O'Malley said he supports the commission's efforts to conduct a thorough investigation to determine what happened with the customer funds and how those funds can be returned as soon as possible and punish any wrongdoing. Well, since the Securities Investment Protection Corporation, that's SIPC, placed MF Global into insolvency the 31st of October, MF Global customers with positions have received an inadequate percentage of their total funds, says Amalie. Customers that thought it prudent to liquidate their positions prior to the insolvency, the cash-only customers, have received none of the funds used to secure their trading at all. The inability of MF Global customers as a whole to access their funds has affected trading in futures markets, he says, and shaken public confidence. And finally today, the United States Department of Agriculture is now making available more than $478 million to some 28 telephone utilities in 18 states to fund broadband improvements for their customers. Improvements will provide residents of these rural communities with high-speed internet connections to improve health care and educational opportunities and connect to the global marketplace. The announcement was made at the National Association of Regulatory Utility Commissions in St. Louis, Missouri, by USDA Rural Utility Service Deputy Administrator Jessica Zuffolo. And that's a look at today's agricultural news.
Agricultural programming is made possible by Farm Credit Services of Illinois. Farm Credit Services of Illinois has been providing for farmers' credit and insurance needs for over 95 years, including real estate, operating and machinery loans, crop and life insurance protection, and programs for young and beginning farmers.
You're listening to the Closing Market Report from Illinois Public Media. It's public radio for the farming world. It's a Wednesday afternoon. Up next, the Weeds team right here on the Urbana-Champaign campus of the University of Illinois has been working for the better part of a decade to figure out how water hemp develops resistance to herbicides. As you'll hear, a molecular scientist from Illinois has identified the genetic code that provides that resistance. But mostly, the development is simply a numbers game. The Department of Crop Sciences labs at the University of Illinois are heavily used to test water hemp tissue samples. The researchers are looking for the molecular markers that they found a few years ago that can tell them whether or not the weed is herbicide resistant. They have 500 samples from about 100 fields to go through. Most of them come from the northern part of Illinois. Farmers in the southern part of the state already know they have herbicide-resistant water hemp in their fields. The resistant populations have just slowly been moving northward, says molecular weed scientist Pat Tranel.
You know, water hemp, as we've talked about, it's dioecious, meaning the plants are either male or female, and so there's pollen movement. Every time you have fertilization of a plant, it's getting pollen from plants, you know, from wherever, you know, from various distances away. And so pollen is effectively spreading the resistance.
There are most certainly other ways resistant water hemp can move from one field to the other beyond open pollination. The seed are really tiny and get stuck in the crevices of equipment. More importantly, there are hundreds of thousands of seeds, and resistance development is a numbers game.
You're dealing with low probability events, and so the way to be successful with a low probability event is to throw a lot of numbers at it, right? Water hemp produces thousands and thousands of seed. A single female plant can produce, you know, a million seed. And so even if you have a one in a million event, well, one plant can produce a million seed to get you closer to having that one in a million probability. So I think it's largely a numbers game, and water hemp produces lots of numbers. And then also the dioecious nature, where you have a lot of genetic diversity because you have pollen moving between plants, between fields. And that also does a great job of stacking resistance. So one farmer might be using a glyphosate program here and select for glyphosate resistance. His neighbor might be using diphenoether program, selecting for that resistance. Pollen moves between the fields, and now you get resistance to both of those in the same plant.
Water hemp plays the numbers game very well. There are some populations of the weed resistant to as many as five herbicide families. For University of Illinois Extension, I'm Todd Gleason.
Support for the Closing Market Report comes from AgriGold Hybrids, featuring the AgriGold Giants, a group of five new hybrids designed to meet the performance standards of yield, health, and consistency required by Midwestern corn growers. More information is at AgriGoldGiants.com or at 800-262-7333.
You're listening to the Closing Market Report. It is a Wednesday afternoon. On the phone line, let's take up the cash grain market. Scott Butcher of the Anderson's Climbers facility in Delphi, Indiana. Good afternoon to you, Scott.
Good afternoon, Todd.
Basis has remained very strong across the Midwest. I suspect it's very strong there for corn, at least. Is that right?
Yeah, it is. It's definitely stayed strong in our area for corn and soybeans both right now.
And why is that the case?
You know, not a lot of movement right now. I mean, with the cash market being where it is, you know, we've lost quite a bit off the futures price from where we were, and guys are kind of looking at that saying, you know, they're going to wait for a little bit and see what happens, and, you know, we're waiting for a recovery, so to speak.
But the marketplace is telling them really waiting's not worth that time.
Yeah, that's exactly right. I mean, with the basis values that are out there, it's pretty beneficial to move stuff right now versus waiting until, you know, even maybe April, May, as far out as April, May. There's just not a lot of benefit to waiting, but, you know, everybody's playing the waiting game right now regardless.
And when you combine that into your usage patterns, are you coming up short for the ethanol plant?
No, not yet. I mean, obviously, just coming out of harvest, we're still in decent shape. But, we want to keep corn moving. We don't want to see very many days where, you know, we don't have anybody rolling in.
Look ahead to January 1 when things will change for your corn plant, at least for the bottom line. How does that impact, once we take off those tax credits, what's happening in your ethanol plant?
Yeah, it'll be interesting to see what happens. I mean, I don't think we, have a real good handle on it yet. As long as things stay profitable, I mean, I don't think it's near as big a concern maybe as what it would be if margins weren't quite as good. But, obviously right now things are pretty good for us.
Tell me about soybean basis and end users in your area.
Soybean basis has, improved vastly from harvest. I mean, we were, saw very, very poor basis levels in our area at harvest time. With no bean demand, there just wasn't a lot of, demand for soybeans in the area. So a lot of guys put them in the bin, and consequently, since harvest is finished, basis values have increased quite a bit. The processors in our area are starting to look for beans pretty aggressively. That feels like it's going to continue until Jan 1.
Do you have a good understanding of why there was a lack of demand in the area at the end of the year? It would seem that that would be the opposite of what really should happen.
Yeah, we definitely saw, here in the last few months, even back to the summertime, there was absolutely no meal or oil demand to speak of. So the corn or the soybean processor really wasn't real aggressive for beans just because they didn't really have a lot of demand for their end product. So they haven't, they basically got by using as few beans as possible. And that kind of continued on into harvest. They really never got more aggressive for soybeans and were just barely getting by with, what they were taking in.
Were you able to go further up the line and ask those end users, their customers, why they weren't buying?
I think most of it comes back to profitability. I mean, if you look at, the chickens or, the folks that are using the meal, their profitability was pretty poor or has been for, quite some time. So I think the demand for meal has not been there. Now, oil, I can't really speak to that. I don't really have a good handle on that. But I know meal demand sure has lagged off, it seems like.
And what are your bids for the day?
Right now for cash corn, we are $6.69 and soybeans $11.82.
Thank you so much, Scott.
Thanks, Todd.
Scott Butcher is with the Anderson's Climbers facility in Delphi, Indiana. He joins us here on the Closing Market Report on this Wednesday afternoon. Please do visit our website if you have the opportunity. Several things there that we'd like you to do. One is to sign up for our weekend newsletter. It's a good one. It's free. You can do that over on the right-hand side of the page. Just hit subscribe. If you don't like it, come back and hit unsubscribe. If you really like it and you'd like to get a text from us on USDA report days with the numbers, come back and hit manage. You can do that now if you're already subscribed. Hit manage and just give us your cell phone number and we'll text you on USDA report days with the numbers from the United States Department of Agriculture. Back in just a couple of minutes for some of you. We'll talk about the agricultural weather forecast. For the rest of you, have a good afternoon.
It's National Harvey Wallbanger Day. It's also St. Castris, Patron of Cattle Day. On this day in agricultural history in 1789, Elijah Craig, according to some historians, distilled the first bourbon whiskey from corn in Bourbon County, Kentucky. What's not in dispute is that Craig founded a distillery, as well as building Kentucky's first cloth manufacturing mill, its first paper mill, and its first mill for manufacturing rope from hemp. In 1880, Edwin Drake died, an American driller. He discovered the first productive oil well near Titusville, Pennsylvania, that launched the modern U.S. petroleum industry. He struck oil at a depth of 69 feet on August 27th of 1859, Drake used an old steam engine to power the drill. Ironically, Drake died in poverty after years of crippling illnesses. In 1910, a patent for the first electric insect zapper was issued to William H. Frost of Spokane, Washington. The invention used a number of electronically charged parallel wires. In 1923, Jack Colby was born. An American electrical engineer, he invented the first integrated circuit, for which he shared the 2000 Nobel Prize in Physics. And in 1974, London's famous flower and vegetable market moved from Covent Gardens. And that's this day in agricultural history.
You're listening to the Closing Market Report. It is a Wednesday afternoon. Drew Lerner with World Weather Incorporated in Kansas City now joins us by phone. Thanks, Drew, for taking the time with us. Where do you want to start on the planet with the weather this afternoon?
Well, I think we should talk a little bit about all the rain falling in parts of the lower Midwest. It's getting pretty wet down there, and I'm a little concerned about that because it's so blasted early in this La Nina winter weather pattern. La Nina, from our past experience, it almost always produces abundant precipitation from the northern parts of the Delta through the Ohio River Basin, and it's something that usually happens from December through March. And here it is, November, and we're already doing it, and the ground's getting pretty saturated. If we keep the pattern going, we're going to end up with some significant flooding later this winter and into the early spring, and we're going to have to watch that pretty closely. Now, one of the lessons that I've learned over the years is that what's happening right now on a persistent basis doesn't get perpetuated forever. It does break down. So there's a fairly good chance we'll see some drier weather involved here at some point. But still, it's getting wetter, and we do need to keep an eye on that as a potential issue. We had flooding last spring as well. In hard red wheat country, we still have a storm system that will skirt the southeastern corner of the region on a Monday into Tuesday. The storm system, unfortunately, will be the next big rain producer for the Ohio River Basin and parts of the northern Delta. Again, some 1 to 2 inch plus amounts of rain expected in those areas. But in hard red wheat country, probably only going to look for amounts upwards to about a half inch in the southern parts of the southwest corner of the region of the Texas Panhandle, and then Oklahoma may end up with some 1 to 2 inch rains. Outside of the U.S., we've got a few other areas of interest going on. We've got a lot of dryness still going on in parts of Ukraine and portions of Russia, even southeastern Europe. Some of these areas have been dry since the early part of September, and it's just something that's really going to have a negative impact on our production potentials as we get into the spring, perhaps. All these crop areas are now dormant, though, and there's no way the precipitation, if it shows up, is going to make much of a difference for crop establishment. On the other side of the coin, in China, conditions are just about perfect. They've been getting ongoing regular currents of rainfall across the heart of their production areas, not only wheat, but rapeseed producing areas. They're going to have one of their best established crops they've seen in many, many years.
And in South America?
South America is looking pretty darn good, too. For a La Nina year, we should be seeing more dryness than we have in Argentina and southern Brazil, and neither country is reporting any kind of real serious problems. We've had some dryness around, but it's always been eased up in a timely fashion. Maybe a small part of northwestern Argentina lost some production potential earlier this season with some dryness there. And there's a few areas in center west portions of Brazil that are still running a little on the dry side, but it's not a critical situation. As we go forward through these next 2 or 3 weeks, we're going to find far southern Brazil turning a little bit drier. That's Rio Grande do Sul and parts of Uruguay and maybe southern Paraguay.
Thank you so much for taking the time with us today.
Have a great afternoon.
You too. That's Drew Lerner. He's with World Weather Incorporated in Kansas City. That wraps up this Wednesday edition of the Closing Market Report. I'm Todd Gleason.
Agricultural programs are made possible by Auditory Care Center, an independent hearing care center serving Champaign, Piatt, Ford, Vermilion, and other East Central Illinois counties. Auditory Care Center offers hearing evaluations as well as selection, fitting, and repair of hearing aids at 892-5959 in Rantoul.